Greetings to our audience from all over the world. You're joining us for the Knowledge in Action podcast. Once again, we're coming to you with another podcast on gender inclusion in politics. And we are going to be having a conversation about the forms of disempowerment that keep women and young women and women in general out of the decision-making processes. As we explore the conversation on the disempowerment that keeps women out of decision-making processes, we are looking to see what exactly plays into making sure that women have consistently been left out of decision-making processes. This podcast is brought to you by MSTCDC in Arusha in partnership with the Danida Fellowship Center and the Swiss government, who are sponsors of the East Africa Community Youth Fellowship and have gathered here 29 fellows to come and hone their skills in leadership for the political arena and for the economic arena. We have this cohort gathered here today and for the remainder of the week, learning, tooling, and retooling themselves on leadership for the regional integration process in the East African Community. The East African Community Fellowship is a partnership between the MSTCDC, the Jakaya Mrisho Kikwete Foundation, the Julius Nyerere Leadership Center, Emerging Leaders Foundation, and is proudly sponsored by the Danida Fellowship Center and the Swiss government. To help me in this conversation, I have a powerful audience of great minds from around the East Africa community, and I'm going to allow them to introduce themselves one by one. I will start with my guest in my immediate left, joining us from Rwanda. Kindly tell the audience who you are and what you think of the topic of the day.
Thank you very much, Estella. I'm Jean-Claude Tsengimana from Rwanda, and I am youth and women in power in the leadership and the socio-economic transformation, and a student in international development. I'm here to discuss on an empowerment of the women in the labor force, in the labor force, and in the access to factor of productions, because we can't reach on sustainable development without or neglecting female labor force participation. So I'm here and I'm interested. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jean-Claude, and thank you very much for joining us in this conversation. Indeed, we enjoy and celebrate every opportunity we get to have men celebrating and supporting women in their participation in decision-making, and especially in the campaign to get women to have control over the aids to trade and ensuring that they participate effectively in the economic development of our continent and our region. Even as I continue to introduce my guests, I have a guest, powerful guest joining us from Kenya, an Excellency and ESC Youth Ambassador who's going to introduce herself. Esther, please take the floor and introduce yourself to our audience.
Okay, thank you very much, Stella. My name is Esther Wamboi Gitau. As earlier on mentioned, I'm the Deputy Youth Ambassador to the ESC representing Kenya. I'm also a law graduate, and I'm delighted to be here to shed more light on the crucial role that women play in the factors of production and how important it is for them to be empowered. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Esther. And on my extreme left, we have another guest joining us from Burundi, but this also happens to be a guest who has lived a lot of his life in Nairobi and therefore has been enjoying the benefits of the regional integration process in the East Africa community. I will allow my guest to introduce himself. Eliseus, if you could let the audience know who you are and why you think, what you think about the topic of the day.
Thank you so much, Stella. My name is Eliseus Bamorineza. I'm an East African Community Fellow from Burundi, and I'm super excited to join the discussion today on this empowerment of women and how to address the issue, because it's a critical subject in our fight to achieve the gender equality, but also the implementation of sustainable development goals. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to the conversation that we are going to have.
Thank you very much, Eliseus. That's my powerful audience. In our last conversation, we were having a conversation about the burdens that women have to carry as far as participation in governance and political development is concerned. We are even looking further into the conversation on economic decision-making and the role that women play. It is an established fact that women contribute heavily into the development processes in our countries, but then they do not benefit as much as they should. Women play a huge role in the production of food, but they only own up to less than 10% of the factors of production of food. These standards apply across the board for these processes. How is it that we have ended up allowing women to find themselves in this situation consistently? What is this in our society that is driving the force that keeps women in a place where they completely lack access to the factors of production, but they continue to toil on a daily basis to be able to ensure that our society is thriving, getting access to nutrition, getting access to produce that we even sell as cash crops? Let me hear from you, Jean-Claude.
Thank you very much. It seems there is a hidden force of the women to be inaugurated or participated to use their forces in our work plan, in day-to-day work plan, while we neglect to highlight the right things. Women contribute a lot, and it is a large number of women all over the world, more than 50%. So it seems the women are working, so employment have access, but look behind. Access to inputs, look behind. Education, look behind. And inequality, look behind. It seems the people, due to different inequalities, due to cultural things, due to inheritages, look the labor force of the women behind the men's. So from the little up to the old age, the labor force of the women looks behind, not highlighted at the top. They are coming to work on the last, when there is no one to work, they come up to call a woman to work. So it seems sometimes in different countries, look as cultural, and others look as inherited, and others neglecting the quality and the potential of women while they have a potential we see nowadays. Thank you.
I hear you, Jean-Claude, and I hear you saying that the contribution of women is looked down upon by the different actors whenever all decisions are being made, their contribution is looked down upon. And even when sales are made out of the produce that they make, again, they are put at the back seat so that they are not the ones who are participating in deciding what those resources are going to be used for at a domestic level or even at a public, global, national level and even at a global level. What are your thoughts, Esther, concerning why we keep on putting women in this situation? What is it that motivates the continuous or perpetual oppression of women and putting them on the back seat? They practice, they do a lot to contribute to production, but then they are not given control over the factors of production.
Okay, so ideally, when you look at the participation of women, when we say it's participation, it needs to have inclusion, it needs to have representation. So what we have is theoretical, we have it in the law, that women can participate. They need to be equally represented, but it has not yet actualized practically. And reason being that there are other factors, they might not be seen, but they're still holding us back. These are like the patriarchal attitudes. We also have structural barriers, violence against women, which is still there in many communities, limited financial resources. So when you look at the factors of production, women are contributing here. But again, they're not the sole decision makers. If you look at the land tenure system, even in my country back at home, Kenya, you find that most title deeds are under the ownership of men. So I might be tilling in this land, but it is not under my custody or ownership. It also goes back to the idea of women leadership. not yet being warmed up to. It's still a foreign concept. And if you look at, I'll keep using Kenya because that is what I'm conversant with. You look at the 2013 elections, in the governor's position, we had zero being women. Then it progressed to 2013, where we were trying to warm up a bit. Sorry, 2017. And we had three women governors. We come to 2022, where we are thinking we have warmed the most, but not yet there. And we had now seven women governors. So it's still a new concept that we are trying to get out of our traditional norms and trying to see a woman as a leader beyond her being a helper in the home state.
Let me push it a little further with you, Esther. Haven't women proven beyond reasonable doubt that they can actually exercise very good leadership when power is bestowed upon them? I mean, the records show that during the pandemic, most of the countries that handled the pandemic effectively were women-led nations. Why is it that there's still, you know, a problem of warming up to the leadership of women? Is it something we know, or we are still yet to find out?
Partly we do know, and the rest we are yet to know. It's a problem of the mindset, because they have proven and we have seen it. But if you look at the types of leadership we have, for example, democracy, I have seen it and it has been proven. We're supposed to have 2/3, not to be in excess of each gender. It goes to the people. And yet again, we make the decision and choose the excess of one gender. It could be the males or the females. And sadly enough, my country has it in the constitution about the 2/3 gender rule. But if you look at it, you find that the male will be in more leadership positions, even in parliament. So that begs the question then, why is it in the constitution? Then it means the framers of the constitution had an idea and they knew that women are capable of. But again, the mindset of the electorate needs to change.
Thank you very much. I'm going to come back to you to even have a conversation about the 2/3 gender principle, because we are talking about the factors of production, but even not having access to power impacts on how, you know, the contribution of women actually finds itself into the mainstream. But I want to bring Eliseus into this conversation. What are your thoughts about what the reasons that cause us to continue putting women in a place where they do not have access to the factors of production, yet we know, and it is documented, that they do the most work in promoting production in our countries?
Thank you. I think social norms, social and cultural norms, are that encourage us to, you know, to look at a woman as a caregiver, someone who is kept, you know, in the closet to care for children, the family, are the major factors that are, you know, holding back the woman from achieving the potential that she has. And for Africa particularly, if you look at the households, they are depending on the land. Statistics shows that between 70 and 90% of wealth in Africa is generated through the land. But then only 10% of land is owned by women. So that tells a lot on now what the woman is able to bring to the table. And you can also look at the issue from the Marxist view, between the proletariat and the bourgeoisie. You realize that men are mostly the owners of the means of production. Women are not. Women are supposed to, you know, to stay at home and wait for what the man is bringing to the table. So as my fellow Esther has emphasized on that, I think there's also an issue of power differences. Women do not need much power, and therefore that determines what they are able to achieve in terms of contribution to self-emancipation and also achieving development. Yes.
Eliseus happens to be a poet par excellence, and maybe one of these fine days, even today if we get lucky, we may hear him reciting one of his poems. But for us to bring poetic justice to this conversation, maybe you need to share with us what is the society losing, or what is society missing out on by not having women enjoying the control of the factors of production?
I think the society is losing the creativity and innovation that women are gifted with. from Chimamanda's point that, you know, back in the times, men were the only ones who were physically fit, you know, to fight and to go to hunt and bring food home. But now we are living in a society where technology has a say in different, you know, fields and different spheres of life. And that needs not necessarily, you know, muscles to, you know, to hold, you know, heavy stuff, but rather the mind that can create, the mind that can think and provide solutions to problems that the world is facing. And from the few women that have been able to access education, we have realized that women are actually also capable to achieve major projects, to contribute to the development of their countries, to bring brilliant ideas to what the world would do to, you know, to find solutions to major problems that the world is facing with the climate change or food insecurity and so on and so forth. So I believe if we were able to bring women to the table, to the decision-making table, that we would benefit, the society would benefit from what the woman is able to put in, to bring in. Yes.
Eliseu says that creativity, innovation that would come from women's participation in, rather women's control over the factors of production is lost in the current design of production. Eliseu argues that work no longer requires the kind of force that it used to apply. We no longer hunt with the primitive weapons. As a matter of fact, women can now carry a rifle and go and shoot a deer, you know, for dinner if necessary. So we are applying old rules or old mechanisms to address current situations, which is what I hear Eliseu saying. But I want to have a conversation with you, Jean-Claude. You come from a country whose president has committed to ensuring that women participate actively in decision-making, and particularly has been able to perform in an exemplary way globally, not just in the continent of Africa, with 52% representation in the National Assembly. And I have seen distribution of cows per home, and every home, whether it is woman-led or man-led, gets access to these cows. And I see the promotion of development running across all homes, not necessarily the ones that are led by men, but also the ones that are led by women. What value has Rwanda gotten from attempting to ensure that women have a bit of space in decision making about the factors of production, controlling the factors of production, and participating in development?
Yeah, thank you very much. It seems there was a talent hidden behind, not looked for the Rwandan before, and now after participating on the different jobs, it seems the empowerment of the woman, or to put the women on the table to contribute on the what is going on and what is to put on the tables for feeding a day to day, it seems it gives a good opportunities for the family to grow. For example, in the rural area, women was participated in mainly in the agricultural activities. And from morning up to evening, without any body hygiene, without thinking on other things else, except agricultural things and the caring of animal. But now, women wake up and men wake up, one try to find the solution to the problems of their household, even the parents and their children. They are shared responsibilities. It seems it boosted the values and the meaningful of family with the same or shared responsibilities of caring of the children in every and each scenario. Earlier, the responsibility of the parent to caring of children was only or taken by woman of in all domains. But right now, there is an awareness of the shared responsibilities. So it boosts the economy of the country, because the economy of a country starts from the family, start from the household, and the shared responsibility, the shared vision, because there is a discussion, because one or the family member, there is something bring on table at the end of the day. At the end of the day, one brings something on table, woman brings something on table, man brings something on table. Then with the shared vision, with the shared contribution to their shared household development, give them a platform to develop. Then it comes from a family and look to the community and as well as to the country. So not only on the family empowerment, but also in the leadership spirit. In the leadership spirit alongside the community level, there you see on the top level, but alongside the community level and the village leaderships, in the sales leadership, also women are engaged. They bring sharpness and show their talents and capability to do something as man can do. So, as you mentioned, the vision or the brightness of the woman sharpened by the platform given by the good leadership promoting equality of women and men.
Thank you very much for that. And indeed, I hear Jean-Claude talking about shared responsibilities, shared decision-making, providing a space for everyone to bring in their creativity and innovation, providing a broad space for the solutions for our society to be discussed. Thomas Sankara argued that nothing definitive or lasting can be accomplished in our country as long as a crucial part of ourselves is kept in this condition of subjugation. This group that he's talking about, even in his country, remains a bigger part of the population, Esther, even in the world. The ratio of women versus the men is definitely higher on the women's side. So what is the world risking by missing this huge population of women in the decision making, but most importantly in the control and decision making about the factors of production?
What I can say is that as Africa and even our respective countries, we are missing out on a lot. I might not have the magnitude to define it, but let's go back to the gender role we are talking about. If women, even in my country, Kenya, are the most, but again, we cannot deliver taking these women to these leadership positions, then it means even at the grassroots level, that lady, wherever she is, she might not be aware of how influential and impactful she is. Therefore, it cannot be reflected at the national level. Therefore, this means that there's need to work on that mindset at the grassroots level, at the family, which is the fundamental unit, for the woman to be empowered from her home level. By the time she's coming to the county level, to the national level, to the regional level, she has the backing and knows that the community is happy that she's in leadership, that it is not scared, it's a woman in power. And when we talk about this gender equality and inequality, I think we lose the calculation in between, because most of the times when we talk about gender inequality, we think it's about what a man can do, a woman can do better. Then we miss it. It's not about the expression of who a woman is, but the performance of that woman. If she's in an enabling environment, if she has the support of a family, if she has the support of a husband, if she has all the support she needs of the government, then she can perform better. But not ideally to be equal with a man. Because now if it comes to that, it will be about equity and not equality. Mm-hmm. Because equity means then I'll be given the opportunities I deserve, regardless of whether I'm a female or a male.
Indeed, they say equality is a mirage, especially because it is extremely difficult to achieve it due to the differences in the way we are created and how we show up in society. However, equity is an achievable target, and we are constantly talking about equality before the law and equality on wage for labor. And I think this is what we're asking for most women. But the question I'm asking myself, even as I listen to you, is that you come from a country that has laws that prescribe women's participation in governance. And we're talking about the two-thirds gender principle that has never been passed in the National Assembly. The the challenges or the impediments to its passing are more human related and men related than any other way. Are we saying that men dislike women that much, or that men are afraid of women? What is it that is standing in the way of just passing laws that will create more space for women's participation in decision making and control of factors of production?
Really, it's not about dislike. I think it's more of ignorance, which is no defense. Because if you are used to being in power so much, it's what you had highlighted before, and even what we had discussed in class. If you're so used to leadership and other people want to come on board, then you'll feel threatened. So coming from such a mindset that we are now creating these opportunities, some in our countries call them flower girls. For example, if it's a position of a women representative, you feel that you're giving this lady leadership. You're gifting her leadership. She has not worked for it. And that is why many frown at the two-third gender rule, because you have to work, you deserve to work for you to come to this table. So it also comes from that point that the men feel it's a pity party. I'm giving you this because it's a principle. It has to be a two-third gender rule. But you have not worked for it. I have worked for it. So if you look at this principle, then it means it needs to be understood. What exactly is the two-third gender rule? Am I gifting you a leadership position, or am I giving you because you have the merit to be in that position?
Elizeus, let me bring you into the conversation, and I want to kind of problematize on this conversation. The reason why I want to problematize is because I want us to get deep into what is actually lost when women are excluded from making decisions about the factors of production. Women play a huge role in deciding what food comes to the table, which is considered a domestic role. And as a matter of fact, men shrug and let the women proceed to make the decision about the food that is going to be eaten. Unless, of course, they have a favorite that they want to have for dinner or for lunch on that day. Women make decisions about what is planted, how much of it is going to be planted, especially because at the time of production, they're the ones who are participating in the farm. They will grow it, they will weed, they will harvest. Women play a very small role once the sales have been made. And the decision on what that money is going to be used for sometimes is not made by women. As a matter of fact, there's documented evidence that some men have collected all of the money made out of production and gone and used it to marry a second wife, or sometimes to, you know, entertain themselves, etc. Is it an inability to see the bigger picture that we allow women to make all the decisions at the local level, but then we then detach them from the macro level of decision making about the control of seed? Or is it that we are totally unable to see why it is valuable for women to participate in the entire thread of decision-making as far as the factors of production are concerned?
I think your question is an interesting one, because I come from a community where women were the ones who used to participate in deciding on which seeds to plant, were the ones who used to participate in ahead of the season for farming or planting crops, were the ones who used to participate in activities that would touch on selecting seeds and storing them in a particular space to ensure that they are safe ahead of the season for farming. Now, with your example of seed banking at macro level, with women not being included, I think it's part of men not allowing change to happen, not willing to include women in decision making in leadership position. Another factor would be that women are not aware of their rights. That in fact, what the law or the constitution of the country guarantees them to do particularly for this company that deals with seed banking. Back to my example that I gave with land ownership, you realize that some women or girls have not been able to access education. They are not land, and therefore some of them are not aware of some laws that actually encourage them to inherit piece of land from their families. So most of girls have not been able to benefit from the property family because they're not aware of how what the law guarantees and how to seek for support to enforce that existing law. So I would argue that these women who are not participating in macro level decision making, they're probably not aware of their rights, or they are silenced by the men who are the top of this macro level seed banking company.
Indeed, there are many factors that stand in the way of women's participation in making decisions about the factors of trade. From the conversation we're having here, you have heard from Eliseus that illiteracy is a factor, oblivion or lack of knowledge of their rights is a factor that may keep women away from this decision making. Adamant behavior from men to continue oppressing women and denying them access to some of these spaces to make decisions about the factors of production is another factor. Of course, ignoring indigenous knowledge and the understood traditions where women actually participated effectively in decisions such as the decisions of seed banking is a factor. As a matter of fact, Eliseus, you will be impressed to know that the same tradition was maintained by the Kikuyu community in Kenya. The knowledge about seed banking in the Luo community was transferred by women, is currently being held by women, and is transferred in written by women based on the language that they understand how to write. We also hear from Esther that mindset is also one of the biggest factors in this entire conversation, that for as long as people are still captured by patriarchy, capitalism, and neocolonialism that continues to cause them to want to oppress somebody in order for them to remain at the top, it's going to continue being a struggle. We hear a conversation from Esther about the possibility of ensuring that the space is created and people understand the safety of that space and not feel like it's a competition between men and women or who's going to be at the top, but a conversation about tapping into the resource that these women bring. I also hear Jean-Claude speaking eloquently about the fact that there's plenty that women are bringing onto the table that is not understood, and therefore we miss out on the creativity, the innovation, the shared responsibility, the reduction of the burden on the man if there are two people controlling the factors of production and definitely contributing to production in the home. There's plenty that can be done. And all of the positions that they're giving are rhyming quite well with the thoughts of Thomas Sankara, who we have anchored this gender inclusion conversation on, saying that it is impossible to develop our society while leaving a certain, a larger part of the group behind. And most importantly, that it is extremely important that we get the voices of these women in every conversation on decision-making, but not just decision-making, but decision-making on factors of trade. I'm going to allow our audience to make a rallying call to all of us so that walking away from this conversation, we have a message on what we need to do to begin addressing this problem of having women contributing the most to production, contributing the most to development, and yet their contribution is not recognized at the time of making decisions about the factors of production, at the time of deciding who owns capital. Let me get a rallying call from Jean-Claude. I'm going to proceed to Eliseus, and I will give Esther the closing word. Jean-Claude, over to you.
Thank you. Women truly need have to have an equal opportunity to own land, to own property, to engage in decent work, and to promote a better sharing of the core works. So this is because the gender equality of today is equal to the sustainable development of tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Jean-Claude. Gender equality of today is equal to sustainable development of tomorrow. If we are seeking sustainable development, we better invest in gender equality. Over to you, Eliseus.
Thank you so much. My clarion call on ensuring that we dismantle these cultural and social norms which keep holding back women. These social norms have made us believe that, you know, women come as second creatures. If you read, you might have come across the book by Simone de Beauvoir, who is one of the feminists fought for women's rights in his book Second Sex, saying that one is not born but becomes a woman, which is suggesting that they already. Social norms that prescribe who becomes a woman and how one becomes a woman, already suggesting that this woman is said to fit to achieve particular goals, and these ones are for a man, and the other ones are for a woman. So there's a need to change this mentality, and this can only happen through education of young girls, and empowerment scheme for women, but also ensuring that we include boys and men in this space, because with the feminist movement, which is seen as a movement that is fighting for women's rights, from the man's point of view, is seen as as a threat, that this is a gender thing, is about to take away our privileges. And in some cases, whether men or women, we are not used, we are not willing to leave our privileges that easily. So there's a need to include men in this in space for conversation on what women deserve, and the need to fight for these rights. And there's also a need for to ensure that what is written on the paper is also practiced on the ground. For instance, with the law on inheritance, land inheritance by women, which in some cases, because of cultural norms and how a woman is not recognized in the community as owner of a piece of land, in some cases, when it comes to distribute a piece of land, maybe by the family, by the father, girls are left behind. They're not recognized. There's no one to fight for them. So there's a need to ensure that these laws are enforced and are benefiting the people that should benefit from this law.
Thank you very much, Eliseus. I think you speak of very profound things. And your closing words, Esther?
My parting shot would be one. We are making baby steps to the right direction, but we have a very big room for improvement. That means, as Eliseus had pointed out, that we need to move from the theoretical frameworks and have implementation mechanisms. And this is from the local level before we go to the national level. Only then can we have a proper understanding of the role of a woman, away from all these misunderstandings of the feminist agenda and everything being messed up and misunderstood and misconstrued. There's more that a woman can bring to the table only if given the platform and the enabler.
There it goes, the parting shots. It is not a competition between men and women. It is about ensuring that we get the best out of all sexes when we are talking about factors of production and development. This is the Knowledge in Action podcast coming to you from the MSTCDC Arusha, having a conversation about gender inclusion. This conversation was not conclusive, but there's a rallying call to you to promote women's participation in the decisions about factors of production, women's control of the factors of production. Men need to become comfortable with the idea of allowing women to come into the space to control factors of production. And most importantly, that it needs to be done in a space of trust. Education is extremely, extremely important in this process. Trusting that everyone has a contribution to make is extremely important in this process, and acknowledging the benefits that have already arisen out of women's participation in decision-making is critical in making all this work. There's more conversations to be had, and we encourage you to continue having them even outside of this podcast. As for today, we are signing out from the MSTCDC Arusha. This is the Knowledge in Action podcast brought to you by MSTCDC in partnership with the Danida Fellowship Center and for the fellowship in collaboration with the Swiss government. Thank you very much.